Lynn Hiles Ministries presents Dr. Lynn Hiles, That You Might Have Life. And here's your host, Dr. Lynn Hiles.
Welcome back to the program again this week. I trust you have been tuning in every week as we are doing, I think, one of the most important studies you can do. I know that most people try to stay away from things that are eschatological or the study of last things, but I believe it is one of the most important keys to understanding the Bible than any other thing, perhaps, maybe, at least it rates up there very highly in understanding, because if you understand the eschatology, all of a sudden parables begin to make sense, and the things that Jesus is saying in the context of the audience he's saying it to. We have filmed several of these programs, and you can watch them again. Just if this is the first time you're tuning in, you say, well, I'd like to go back and watch this again, or I would like to study them. You can go back to our YouTube channel and watch them at your leisure, or you can listen to the audio portions of it on our podcast or on your Android device. There is an RSS feed that comes directly from my website at lynnhiles.com. In the upper right-hand corner, there are icons that will take you to those channels. And I encourage you to go back and study these things. I'm not trying to convince you simply of my views. I'm trying to offer to you, I think, a preponderance of evidence that is pretty well irrefutable. I think that, there may be some details, of course, that you can say, well, I see this a little differently. But when you see these things in the context of what is written, I believe that you start to understand the whole flow of the Scriptures as not some isolated event, because we read the Scriptures many times as if it is written to us, when in fact it's written for us, but not to us. So we have to look at it through the lens of how the audience that Jesus was speaking to would have understood this. And we have to understand it through the lens of what covenant they are under and what covenant he is offering them. And so Jesus came at the end of an old covenant to offer a brand new covenant, and that was the dividing line of history. The end of an age was upon them. We've covered that pretty thoroughly in the first few videos. The end of the age, which is translated many times in King James as end of the world, was not the end of cosmic collapse. It is not the Greek word cosmos. It is the Greek word for eon. It was not the end of the world as in a global collapse. It was the end of the age as in the end of the age of the old covenant. Now, I'm going to come back because I think we covered pretty well in the last several settings the comparisons between Ezekiel and Revelation. And we showed you that in the book of Ezekiel, there is almost an exact replica of the fourth chapter of Revelation. Because you see, if you were reading the book of Ezekiel and you did not know where you were reading, you would say, these are quotes from Revelation. Because Ezekiel describes the throne room of Revelation chapter 4 with the living creatures around the throne, with the one seated on the throne, and with the little book that was in the right hand of the one who was seated. He gives that book to Ezekiel, and in Ezekiel he tells him to eat this book. It will be sweet in your mouth and bitter in your belly. And then he comes over and he tells John in the book of Revelation, take this book and eat it. It will be sweet in your mouth and bitter in your belly. In the book of Ezekiel, he tells them that what is in this little book is lamentation, mourning, and woe. When you come to the book of Revelation, and the Lamb who was slain is found worthy to open the book and to loose the seals thereof, they sang a new song, saying, thou hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every nation, kindred, tongue, and people, and you are worthy. So in the book of Revelation, when the Lamb opens the book, it is lamentation, mourning, and woe for the apostate people of Israel. But it was, thou hast redeemed us to God by thy blood, for all those who had received Messiah and who had applied the blood to the doorpost of their houses. And as you can see, even as you look at the Exodus paradigms that I've talked about, the blood applied in Exodus protected them from the plagues that fell in Egypt. The blood of the Lamb in the New Testament protects us from the plagues that fell in the book of Revelation. And again, these plagues came in between 66 and 70 AD, around around those dates, because what was being fulfilled was God was keeping his end of the covenant bargain from the curses of Deuteronomy. And I'm going to show you comparisons of that as we move forward into this. My goal in the next several settings is to compare this with Matthew 24, because as I shared with you in the first couple segments, the book of Revelation opens by saying this is the revelation that God gave to Yeshua to show his servants things which must shortly come to pass. So it is, first of all and foremost and primarily, a revelation of Jesus Christ and his redemptive work, but it's also a revelation that God gave to Jesus to show his servants things which must come to pass, shortly come to pass. And the things that he must shortly come to pass was what he prophesied in Matthew 24 that would occur within that generation. And we've already covered those time texts prior to this. You need to go back and review them, because over and over and over again, he talks about the imminence of what was about to occur in the first century. And so as you begin to look at those things, you start to realize these are things that are coming upon natural Israel, and then the inclusion of the Gentiles, because as they sang a new song, they found out that every creature in heaven and earth and under the earth, and every creature, in other words, it was the inclusion, the mystery that had been hidden from ages, was that God was going to reveal himself even to the Gentiles. That is the mystery of God that is finished in the book of Revelation, is that God would include both Jew and Gentile in his redemptive work. So it was for unbelieving apostate Israel, it was a terrible day of the Lord. For the believers, it was the great day of the Lord, and God called a remnant out of that people that would be followers of him. Now, I'm going to go back in Matthew 22, because all of these parables are a covenant lawsuit that God is bringing against Israel and against the apostate people, the scribes, the Pharisees. He's going to prophesy a multiple of woes in chapter 23 and chapter 24 of Matthew. We see those woes come to pass when you get into the book of Revelation. So what he prophesied was coming was now being fulfilled, and John the Revelator is writing the things which must shortly come to pass. And he declared to them again that the time is at hand. They which pierced me will look upon me. He wrote it to seven churches that are really in Asia. It would have had some relevance to a first century bunch of people. Now, let me just go back. I'm just going to go back to 22. I'm going to read from the New King James Version, Matthew 22. And Jesus answered and spoke to them again by parables, and said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son and sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. And again, he sent out other servants, saying, 'Tell those who were invited, see, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding.' But they made light of it and went their ways, one to his own farm, another to his business, and the rest seized his servants and treated them spitefully and killed them. But when the king heard about it, he was furious, and he sent out his armies," and watch this, and the king was furious because they were invited to come into the marriage, the covenant, the new covenant, the marriage of the Lamb. He was preparing a bride for his son, and they invited him to the wedding, but they used them despitefully. But when the king heard about it, he was furious, and he sent out his armies and destroyed those murderers, watch this, and burned up their city. Then he said to his servants, 'The wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Therefore, go into the highways, and as many as you find, invite to the wedding.' So those servants went out into the highways, gathered together all whom they found, both bad and good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he saw a man there that did not have on a wedding garment. So he said to him, 'Friend, how did you come in here without a wedding garment?' And he was speechless. And the king said to the servants, 'Bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen.'" The many that were called was, first of all, the house of Israel. But many of them had rejected the invitation to come to the marriage, and so now their city was about to be burned, and that they were going to be cast into outer darkness where there would be weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's not necessarily talking about somebody dying and going to hell after a while. That's talking about the judgment that would come upon them when they would see people coming from the east, the west, the north, the south, sit down at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and they themselves were cast out. Now, we go on over then, we come on over into Matthew 23. Jesus is again laying out this covenant lawsuit, and he prophesies several woes to the Pharisees and scribes. I'm not going to go into all of them. I'm just going to jump in here for time's sake at verse 29, where he says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees." This is Matthew 23, New King James Version, verse 29. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, if we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would have not been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Therefore, you are witnesses against yourselves that you are the sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up then the measure of your father's guilt. Serpents, brood of vipers, how can you escape the condemnation of hell?" This Greek word here for hell is Gehenna. He was talking about the Valley of Hinnom outside of Jerusalem, where the bodies were thrown over the walls during the siege of the Romans, and they were burnt with fire, and the fire was not quenched, and the worm was not dying. He's drawing from imagery from the book of Isaiah, from former battles and a catastrophe and a judgment that would come as a result of an alien army coming to plunder the land and to carry them away into captivity. And so he's talking to them as a generation of vipers, and he said, how can you escape the damnation that's about that? See, that's a condemnation that was coming on them in the first century. And see, he goes on to say, Therefore, indeed, I send you prophets, wise men, and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify. Some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city. Watch this, that on you may come the blood, all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechias, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. And watch this time text. Assuredly, I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. Jesus gives the prophecy then in Matthew 24 of the coming judgments, the coming tribulation, the coming earthquakes and famines, etc., etc., Jerusalem being encompassed with armies. And when he comes to them, he tells them, they ask him the question, when will these things be? And Jesus answers their question. And Matthew 24, verse 34, when he said, this generation will not pass until all these things come to pass. This generation that Jesus prophesied to is the same generation he was speaking to in Matthew 23 when he said, assuredly I say unto you, these things will come upon this generation. He was talking to the scribes and the Pharisees, and he's prophesying all of these woes. He says, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets. Now, this is the final words of Matthew 23. O Jerusalem, you're the ones, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, and you who kill the prophets and stones those who are sent to her, how often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate, for I say to you, you shall not see me no more until you say, blessed is he that comes in the name of the Lord. So he's telling them that Jerusalem was the one who killed the prophets and stoned them that were sent to them. And I feel like I need to reiterate this because we see the judgments of God on apostate Israel, but you have to remember that he tried to do everything. See, his heart was not judgment. His heart was to bring redemption to the house of Israel and a return from exile. And he was offering them a whole brand new covenant and a whole new lamb and a whole new Exodus, except that they were not willing to come to the wedding feast. They were not willing to gather under the wings. The only place God has wings is on the mercy seat. He wanted to give them mercy, but they would not. Therefore, he said, your house is left to you desolate. But he wanted to gather her under his feathers as a hen doth gather her chicks, but you would not. Now, let me come here and show you some scriptures that I believe identify the city that Revelation, the 18th chapter, is talking about, the harlot city. I believe, and I think we're going to show you some pretty irrefutable evidence that connects this to Revelation 18. Now, remember again in Matthew 23, he said, "Oh, Jerusalem, you're the ones that killed the prophets. Jerusalem, you're the ones that stoned them that sent them. Jerusalem and the house of Israel, you were the ones that were invited to the wedding, but you didn't come to the wedding. Therefore, the armies are coming to destroy your cities." This indictment is a covenant lawsuit, and Jesus is bringing it against Israel, yet at the same time, giving them still space and opportunity to repent, but he's about to go out and their house is about to be left unto them desolate. Now, let me just take a few scriptures here. Revelation, the 18th chapter, verse number 2 says, "And he cried with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and the cage of every unclean bird." Perhaps the devils that he's talking about here is the generation of vipers that he was talking about in Matthew 22 and chapter 23, a generation of vipers. You are of your father, the devil. So Babylon, he's calling the great city, the harlot city. And, you know, the several things about Babylon that I believe he's using this imagery to connect it to an adulterous woman. God was only married to Israel and she committed adultery, and because of adultery, it would be the only legal reason that you could actually put her away and get married to another. But even in Romans 7, the Bible says that as long as the first husband is alive, that the woman is not as bound by the law to that husband as long as the first husband is alive. But if her husband is dead, she's free to be married to another, even to him. And it tells you in chapter 4 that the one she should be married to, not chapter 4, but Revelation 7, verse 4, she says to him that we should be married to another, even to him who's raised from the dead. So the death of Jesus freed both him and them to be married to a resurrection life and to a completely different and new covenant, so that they were both. But it's because of this adulterous woman, because in Revelation, she also says, "I sat as a queen and I'm not a widow." She refuses to admit that she's the very one who killed her own husband. "I am not a widow and I will see no sorrow," and therefore the sorrow would come upon her. He tells them in chapter number, or he tells them in chapter 23, it says for, verse 33, "Fill up then the measure of your father's sin, you generation," verse 33, "you serpents, you generations of vipers, how can you escape the damnation of hell?" And you see, he told them the same thing in Daniel chapter 9 when he says that "fill up then the measure of your father's sin." So the cup of wrath was slowly filling up. In other words, God is slow to anger. He is not primarily full of wrath, but he gave them, and I'm not getting into the time of this right now because we might get into it later, but the timing of this, he told Daniel he would give them 70 weeks of years or 490 years. In other words, he would forgive until 70 times 7 and multiples of Jubilee. And when Jesus stands up in the temple, his first scripture is, "He sent me to declare the year of the favor of God," which was the year of Jubilee. And so he declares the year of the favor of God and the beginning of his ministry, and he doesn't finish the verse in Isaiah. Because if you finish the verse in Isaiah, it says to declare the year of the favor of our God, but also in Isaiah it says, "and the day of the vengeance of our God." Well, when Jesus first comes on the scene, he's inviting them to the wedding feast, and it's the year of favor. In AD 70, Luke's gospel and his version of the Olivet Discourse says these are the days of vengeance, that all things which were spoken might be fulfilled. So the vengeance came later, but he omitted that in the beginning of his ministry because he's still trying to gather them under his feathers as a hen doth gather her chicks. Let me read you a few other verses in Revelation to show you that this harlot city is in fact Jerusalem, because Jesus is calling out Jerusalem here in Matthew 23. He says in verse 18, Revelation 18, verse number 5 and 6, "For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she has rewarded you, and double unto her, double according to the works. In the cup which she has filled, fill to her double." In other words, she filled up the measure of sin. That's in fulfillment of Matthew 23, verse 32 and 39 through 39, where it says, "Fill up you then the measure of your fathers, your generation of vipers. How can you escape the damnation of hell? Revelation 18, I just read that to you, 18, 5 and 6 declares that. Hell in that text is the Greek word Gehenna, the valley outside of Jerusalem with the dead bodies were cast into the trash. He is alluding to the final battle at Jerusalem there in AD 70. Therefore, and here's Revelation 18, verse 8 and 9. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning, famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication, live deliciously with her, shall bewail her and lament her when they shall see the smoke of her burnings. So you see again, he's fulfilling the prophecy that he gave them in Matthew 23 when he says to them that therefore he will give her the plagues in one day, mourning and famine, and she will be utterly burned with fire. Remember what he says to them in Matthew 23? He will send forth his armies and burn their city. And that's exactly what happened in 70 AD, and the smoke of her torment rose up. Matthew 23, I'm going to just read some things I have in my notes because it helps me cover more ground here. It says, wherefore, this is Matthew 23, verse 34, behold, I send to you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them you will kill and crucify. Some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city, that upon you will come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, the son of Barachias, whom you slew between the temple and the altar. This is clearly an indictment to apostate Israel. If you notice, the fifth seal and the outpouring of the judgments are as a result of the souls under the altar crying out, how long till you avenge us? Luke 21, verse 22 says, Luke's version of the Olive Discourse declares, these are the days of vengeance, that all things which were spoken might be fulfilled. These verses clearly connects to the harlot city, Great Babylon, is because she is the adulterous wife and she refuses to receive the responsibility for killing her own husband. See Romans 7, but in her was found the blood of all the martyrs. This can be none other than Old Covenant Jerusalem and the great harlot. And let me read to you that verse from Revelation 6. Now remember, the seals of the book and the judgments and the catastrophes and the lamentation, mourning, and woe are coming as a result of this particular prayer. Watch this, Revelation 6, verse 9. And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, true, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? That literally, the word earth here is the land. He's talking about the land of Israel. And white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was told them that they should rest for a little season until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be killed. Now, let me just tell you, that is the prayer that is releasing these catastrophes. They're saying, how long till you avenge us? And I just read to you in Luke 21, verse 22, that he said, these are the days of vengeance. In other words, the response of the Olivet Discourse and the catastrophes and the plagues and the judgments of Matthew 24 are a result of God avenging the blood of those that were slain. And remember in 23, he tells you who that was. You scribes and you generation of vipers who have warned you to flee from the wrath to come. He's indicting the people, and then he calls them out by name, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, and you that kill the prophets. So he is using now an iconic term in the book of Revelation to show you that the ones that were that killed the prophets and stoned them that were sent to them was apostate Israel. Now, let me read to you a few more things since we saw that. This is Revelation, the 18th chapter, verse number 4 through 6. It says, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to the work and unto her works in the cup which she has filled, fill to her double. Talking about the cup of wrath. Revelation 17, verse number 6. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And I saw her, and I wondered with great admiration. This woman who is drunk with the blood of the saints is the same people he's indicting in Matthew 23 and 24. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, and you that killed the prophets. And he specifically tells them, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zacharias will come on that generation, not some future generation. Revelation 18, verse 24, and in her was found the blood of the prophets and of the saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. That, again, that can only be in fulfillment of Matthew 23, 36, where he said, verily, I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, and you that kill the prophets and stones them which are sent to thee, how oft I would have gathered you under my feathers, but you would not, therefore your house is left to you let desolate. Revelation, the 18th chapter, verse number 19, and they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing. See, this is the fulfillment of being cast into outer darkness with weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, the great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness. For in 1 hour she is made desolate. That's the abomination of desolation. These verses about weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth are connected to apostate Israel, the removal of Israel, and the inclusion of the Gentiles. Matthew number 8, verse number 10 says this, when Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great a faith, no, not in Israel. And I say unto you that many shall come from the east and the west and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, and the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. He's talking about the inclusion of the Gentiles and the old covenant Israel being cast out. Matthew 13 is another verse. It says, the field is the world and the good seed of the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the sons of the wicked ones. The enemy that sowed them is the devil, and the harvest is the end of the age, and the rapers are the angels. Therefore, in verse number 14, I will cast them into a furnace of fire, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous shall shine forth. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. So you can clearly see that these judgments are coming on apostate Israel. We're just about out of time. We just about get started. But tune in again next week as we're going to continue this study. But if you'd like to sow a seed into the ministry and you'd like to help us to keep preaching the gospel, then sow a seed into the ministry. The easiest way to do that is to go to my website, and there's a link there where you can give via credit card or debit card to our PayPal portal, and you can also send a check or money order to the address that'll come on the screen, or you can call the number that's on the screen. But we do need your help, so do it today. God bless you.
For anyone struggling to understand John's writings in Revelation, this book provides true, biblically-based answers. Through detailed insights into the letters John wrote to the seven churches of his day, you will learn how to avoid the mistakes of the early church to overcome today's trials and tribulations. This book will provoke you to thought and dialogue, bringing greater clarity and revelation of Jesus Christ.